G'day Matthew, my name's Chris Stevens, CEO of Coda Minerals Limited. Coda Minerals is a South Australian-based copper explorer. We have a project about 6 hours north of Adelaide, just next door to Carrapateena and BHP's Oak Dam West project. We have JORC indicated resources and a published scoping study, which I'm sure we'll talk about during this interview.
We will, Chris. Hello and welcome. Good to see you again. We saw you last February. I thought it was time to check in for an update, given the moves in copper. How have you been? What have you been up to since we saw you last year?
Yeah, it's been a busy year. We put out a scoping study last March, and I think we last spoke straight after that. Since then, we've been hard at work of optimizing the study. We've also been in various discussions with potential funding parties. We put out two updates to the study. First was a change of mining method, which increased the net present value by about 30%. So it went from $570 million to $735 million on a pre-tax basis. Then we put out another scoping study update about 2 months after that, looking at improved efficiencies within the underground portion of our mine plan. So it's been a very busy year. There's been a lot of updates. What I'd say is a pretty material improvement to the economics of the project, and then some forward planning as well.
Okay, so the numbers look good, 27% IRR.
31% now.
31% now, yes. Even better. Okay, yep. All good stuff. $20 million market cap company. You just raised a little bit of money.
Yeah.
How does a company of your size, with the money you've got available to you, actually move this thing through the phases? Because I think the market's struggling to understand what to look at and what to believe.
Right. So, I mean, the first point, I guess, is that first part of the question is, how does anyone our size fund a project through? And obviously, it does happen. What it's predicated on is the quality of the management team and their ability to attract investment partners. You don't just sit there and hope someone knocks on your door. There are 1,000 companies listed on the ASX in the junior sector, of which about 400 have some form of project. So you've got to be very proactive. We have advisors appointed, and I am not afraid to pick up the phone and, you know, make sure we talk to the right people. A lot of my background, again, is in commercial. So I've been a contracts person my entire career. And being able to build the models and get the project data room into a point, if you've done a lot of M&A, you know that the projects that are organized, the projects that present themselves in the best light, do get the funding. So I think that's an important part of what we have to do. You've then got to structure that funding right. So the plan is obviously not to go from a 20 million EV to raising, you know, effectively $600 million and developing this thing, or even doing a, you know, sensible 70-30 sort of debt equity split. The plan is to find the right partner to help us take this forwards. Again, when you've got a 20 mil EV with the right project, the leverage is huge. The other point I'd say on this is, having spent a pretty significant amount of time talking to the kind of groups that fund these projects, I know what they're looking for. And a lot of that optimization work, you know, we haven't been sitting here waiting. Again, it's been getting out there and improving the project, taking those metrics up to the kind of hurdle rates that we know serious groups look for.
Right. Okay. So you said a bunch of things there, which I just want to kind of dive into, if you don't mind. Okay,
bit of a long speech. Apologies on that.
It's all good. What I'm trying to work out is, have you got a plan, right? Then, and I want to kind of go through, some of the statements there. So let's start with, you know what they're looking for, and I'm going to guess scale, grade, and margin. Have you got the ability to deliver that? So let's talk about that. What can you show them?
Right. So the first thing is obviously the economics. It's the first pass. Stage in economics. You know, there are groups out there looking for earlier stage projects. There are groups that won't look at funding until you're well into PFS, even early into DFS. So with a post-scoping project, one of the first things we did is put together a serious scope budget plan for PFS. What does the path to production look like? We know what that looks like. That's most of my experience. I'm a feasibility specialist by trade and a modeler. Obviously, an exceptionally well put together financial model goes without saying. So not only the base case of where you're at, but where the management case would be, is what your pathway is to, again, improve the economics of the project. What most groups are looking for scale, I mean, we're looking at about 27,000 tons of cathode, 1,300 tons of cobalt sulfate. Decent scale, a little bit more wouldn't hurt. And then economics. So we've been optimizing the daylights out of this and just making sure we take the riskier parts of the plan, which I would say were in the underground mine, and really de-risking them. And again, putting that through multiple iterations, you know, optimization, looking at ways to improve that. So that's been a big part of our focus as well. And that's
right.
And been in consultation with these groups.
Okay. So because here's what we've seen in the past, you know, 3 years, you know, and I think we talked about it before we came on, actually, is that, you know, the ability for some companies to kind of stay in the game, to be able to play the game, right? And that's basically keeping your head above water in a very, very difficult markets, right? For everyone, right?
Yeah.
Is changing business models, business plans to show that there's an ability to have a kind of near-term revenue opportunity. Now, for copper, they're typically big budget requirements because people want the scale with copper. They need that kind of bulk solution here. Have you adapted or changed, or have any of the conversations that you had suggested you've got groups, you'll have to tie up with groups who need a kind of smaller entry point, a lower entry point?
Generally not. I mean, we have two open pit deposits, and you know, the lowest grade of our open pits is over 1% primary copper. With cobalt credits, you're at 1.7. The first pit's just 15 meters below dune sand, which is likely to be free dig. We've assumed about 30% drill and blast in that for a margin of error and safety. But, you know, they're generally looking for large-scale projects. You know, we have a couple of things. You know, you could probably get into production real quick, but people are just not looking for that. They want scale. And to my mind, 25,000 tons per annum of cathode is about the entry point where people start taking you seriously. So quite the opposite. And again, with the CapEx all in, you know, we're not talking pre-production or any of the things that juniors do to hide the CapEx. Absolutely everything in that model is attributed to CapEx. We're still only a touch over 600 million Aussie. It's well under half a billion US. That's pretty low in terms of capital intensity and pretty low in terms of the peer group as well.
Right. Let's get onto those kind of those conversations in terms of what you were left with, right? So if you bring in a strategic partner, it's their balance sheet and they're running. You're going to, I don't know at what point you want people to kind of come in. Is it anytime soon? Obviously, at this raise, you'll be able to move things forward in terms of some of those studies, some of those, you know, some of the data that you're going to be trying to put together. But yeah, what are the types of structures available to you which allow your shareholders to benefit from some kind of upside? Because from 20 million market cap and not a whole bunch of cash compared to what's going to be required, one, to move this thing through to FID, and secondly, to actually then fund that. I mean, how do you come at that?
The way I see it, this raise is really about protecting the company's balance sheet, making sure we can stay in the game. And yeah, we've been very open with shareholders about that's what it's about. You know, clearly the last thing you want to be doing whilst negotiating with groups is watching your cash balance dip below $1.5 million. So we'll be touch over four by the time the EGM is sort of go through the EGM next month. Structures, really, you're looking at a number of options. Obviously, the first is a total sale, and that always remains a possibility, though with the current share price, I mean, I think I'd be right in saying that's the last thing I'd be looking for, to be quite frank with you. You've got asset sell downs, and you know, your standard sort of what I call the North Asian model. It's really a 30%-ish sell down of your asset. It may be staged, it may not. And that brings someone in. They've got the funding capability. Obviously, they usually be looking to take offtake. You've got to be very careful who you give to your offtake to and how you do it. And then there's various forms of option payment as well. So, I mean, obviously, move, you know, sort of a farm in or a staged earn in to a project, which may give another party control eventually, but leaves our shareholders exposed to the upside of both the copper commodity price uplift, but then again, optimization. So one of the things that this recent raise has done, it's given us a little bit more confidence to just keep spending money on some of the optimization. And, you know, getting sort of an 80 to 90% discount to the net asset value, if you can get that net asset value well above $1 billion, is still a big uplift where we're sitting at now. And that's really where the immediate target is.
Right. So talk to me about timing, because it kind of feels like you shot out of the gate and, you know, things went exceedingly well. The ISCG, you know, and the grades were good and it was all good. All you needed to really demonstrate was kind of, you know, could you demonstrate scale? Obviously, like I say, tough 3 years. I'm not marking anyone down for the last 3 years because the markets were the markets, right? But I am trying to understand what companies need to demonstrate to, you know, get that kind of high leverage uptick. In your case, getting a strategic partner is kind of critical. So the timing of this is going to be important to you. You see what's happening with copper price at the moment. You kind of, I'm not quite sure what, you know, the effects of copper price, how long it'll take to trickle down to junior miners, or certainly of your size, but the sentiment might help. So
yeah,
how do you play this year, for instance? What do you need to say? What do you need to demonstrate? What do you need to do?
The first is continue to work on the optimization. And, you know, we've done a huge amount of work on the underground mine.
But tell me why, though. The so what thing. Okay, I'm working on optimization. You said it a few times, and I haven't picked up on it, but only because I want to know exactly what does that mean, and why is it important, and what exactly are you going to have to be able to show after that optimization process? Yeah.
It's a funny one, because I sometimes in these conversations can dig myself a bit of a hole in that, you know, you talk about optimization and improvement. Well, okay, isn't the project good enough? Well, in reality, we're at the top end of our peer group. We've got an IRR over 30% right now. We're in good shape in terms of that junior, mid-tier, minor sort of peer group projects. But the one thing I know is that where a project goes from being good but possibly hard yards to really moving, where it's very fundable, where people start to take you incredibly seriously, is that magic post-tax NPV to CapEx ratio above 1:1. And in copper, that is rare. I mean, you know, we've seen some of these lithium studies where you're getting 4:1, 8:1, 20:1, some fanciful pricing in there, some less so. But in copper, it is incredibly rare. And that's really what we've been focusing on. So I keep talking about optimization because I know we have a lot of gas left in the tank. I know that we can make this project from a good project to a great project, and that the cost of doing that is relatively limited. In terms of timing, the sulfidization work that we've been doing is ongoing. That's sort of looking at improvements in the flow sheet. You can get 6, 7, 10, 12% improvement to recoveries. That's the equivalent of a resource uptick of 15, 20% in terms of tons. Obviously, when you take into account your resource conversion recoveries. And so that's worth pursuing and relatively low cost. Pursuing additional incremental tons, 14-year mine life, but 11 years at full noise, you'd want to be more like 17, 18-year mine life and 14, 15 years at full noise to be really smashing through those economic hurdles. It's not a need to have, but it's certainly a nice would like to have. And again, for the relatively low cost of pursuing that, all of these things I expect to come in the first half to, you know, slightly over the midpoint of the year. And then again, ongoing conversations with funders. Bit tiresome, I suppose, in terms of a market comment, which is these things do take time. And also, I don't think there's been a lit fuse. You know, retail shareholders haven't been buying small copper stocks. Copper went up how many $100 overnight, and every single copper stock in my sort of watch list went down a little bit. There's definitely some sentiment that still hasn't flowed through, but at the same time, you know, that will change, in my opinion, especially if copper keeps moving. You know, we'll see that incentive price start to move projects. That'll force people to move on the funding. At the moment, they've got a free option. They can sit and watch. That won't last forever.
Let's talk about the cobalt component, okay?
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, cobalt went on a couple of years ago, and you know, old cobalt projects were looked at in favor of me, and it's come way, way off. And that's part market, but it's also part sentiment around cobalt and DRC and all of those sorts of stories that go on. You're Western Australia. Your copper grades are, well, certainly for the phase one project, you're sitting at 1.2, 1.4 type level of copper, just copper. With the cobalt, that takes it up to, you know, 1.7, 1.9% level. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And do you think that people understand copper? Let's help them understand copper.
Yeah.
The copper market, our conversations at OEM say, like, we need this stuff. We need good, consistent supply of this stuff. So you feel that after optimization, you understand the recoveries, and you can understand the kind of price that you can sell it to market for the copper component. The cobalt component, it has a genuine value to your balance sheet, was the balance sheet of you and another partner. So copper should be encountered in here as and given credit, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a primary copper project, but there is a significant cobalt proportion. When Cobalt went on a run, and when Cobalt went on a run, Coda was still really a, you know, bit of a twinkle. You know, I don't think we'd even listed at the point that Cobalt was really starting to run. There was a bit of a joke that at some point this becomes a Cobalt copper project when it was over $100,000 a ton. Now, the reality is that was always going to come down because it is so controlled by, it's, you know, it's tiny, you know, oligopoly controlling a lot of supply. Things are changing. Obviously, you've seen the cobalt price drop from about $100,000 a ton to about $30,000 a ton. Now, we looked at every cobalt price forecast that we could find, and that consensus has constantly been between 50 and about 70, with a sort of average of about $60,000 a ton long term. We're seeing that assumption ramp up a little bit. So, obviously, in our models, we've been using a sort of a slower ramp up. We do disclose everything at spot as well, but the reality is that the forecast for cobalt is pretty strong. Taking that aside, even at current spot prices, this project remains very economic. And we put in our last study update the economics at $21 an ounce silver, $8,400 a ton copper, and then spot, which from memory was about $28,000 per ton cobalt. And the economics of the projects are still very strong. You know, roughly half a billion Aussie NPV pre-tax. Now, with copper moving as it has done, and silver as well going from about $21 to $28, $29 an ounce, the spot economics of this project remain very strong. So that's the first point. Economics with the cobalt price, yes, it's lower. No, it's not, you know, fatal or even bad for, you know, obviously the higher the price, the better. But because of the proportion in copper and everything else, this remains a very economically strong project, even at spot, which is not where the forecast is expected to stay. Much more importantly, let's talk about cobalt as a mineral. Now, without, you know, I'm not going to get crazy technical here, but cobalt is not created equal. Most people in copper, you know, you understand you've got the oxide series, you've got the sulfide series. Obviously, this is a sulfide project, which means flotation. Cobalt generally in Australia is a cobaltiferous pyrite. It is locked up with iron sulfides. Almost impossible to liberate. Can't float it. You can't pressure oxidize it generally. You can't smash it with acid. That way, you're looking at complex pyrometallurgical processes, usually roasters. So when the cobalt price went on a complete run, I'm sitting there going, whoa, this is bad. Everything with cobalt in it is moving and it's not the same. We got Carolite. Carolite is basically a pure copper cobalt sulfide. From memory, it's CuCO2S4. And that means it floats beautifully. We're getting over 90% flotation recoveries, and we're getting 95 up to about 97% through pressure oxidation or ambient tank leach. And so that is a huge advantage for this project. The cobalt recovers brilliantly. Again, that's a huge thing. So we've modeled up every situation, every scenario of copper from $7,000 a ton to $20,000 a ton, and the same with cobalt down to about $15,000 a ton up to 100. There is no scenario in which it makes sense just to forget about the cobalt in this project.
Right. Okay. Can we talk about the projects themselves? Because again, small company problems are different from big company problems, and you know, lots of things go away when you've got lots of money on the balance sheet. But you're talking about a phase one, phase two, open pit, and then underground. Are you sort of combining, conflating numbers somewhat in the sense that with these different projects, talk to me about the economics, the timing,
yeah,
that you, these projects are going to run at for the economics to, you know, hold true, because things go wrong, right? It's you know, these sort of ramp ups are difficult, especially when you've got more than one asset which you're getting after at any one time. So what does that flow look like? What's the sort of timing of that?
Right. So this being a scoping project, we've done an enormous amount of work on the underground mining, because it was, you know, a fairly major portion of this. It needs additional expertise. I'm very confident now that work has been done to an extremely high standard, far beyond what you would normally see at a scoping level project. The open pits, so you start with MG14, just, you know, 15, 20 meters below dune sand. That's very high grade, over 1.4% primary copper. Staging that, the plan would be to produce a concentrate and forget about the cobalt. Two reasons: drives early revenue, but it's also very low cobalt compared to the other deposits. By the time you get into Windabout, then not only have you got, which is another open pit deposit, Again, under dune sand, much higher cobalt. We don't know why. It's just one of those things. What we're really working on there at the moment is increasing the recovery. So it's getting hold of the portion of the copper that lives in oxides rather than sulfides in that deposit. And again, that's a huge opportunity to improve the value of the project. But with that, the optimization of those two pits into the underground gives early revenue. It helps with, you know, working capital facilities after production are generally lower cost compared to just full financing facilities. And it gives you some revenue while you're trying to get underground. Downside of underground is it takes time to get there. So having two open pits is an enormous advantage. That does need work. There is no doubt that I think, you know, I actually wrote my Master of Science thesis on this exact topic, you know, years ago, but it's effectively on scheduling deposits, especially where you've got a mixture of open pit and underground. And so, you know, this we have plans to have this optimized in a much more integrated fashion. And I think there will be wins there as well. That would be an advantage to the project.
Do you think you need to do that work? Are you qualified to do that work? Isn't it really a case of picking groups that have actually done this before? Obviously, open pit's different from underground, etc. And everyone's got their own modeling capabilities and cost inputs, etc. So why spend the money and time doing that for them?
Yeah, so just for the avoidance of doubt, I won't be doing that work. That'll be work done by true experts. I mean, I know who I'd like to do this work, and they invented the entire thing. The work, the value of that, again, it's increasing the net present value of the project. You know, if you've got high tens, low hundreds of you know, NPV and optimization, I don't know what those numbers are. That's worth doing. So again, a lot of work I'm looking at doing at the moment is where you're spending a couple of hundred K and you're getting, you know, anything from sort of tens of millions to low hundreds of improvement. Because again, I do know for a fact, really, that the point that projects get taken really seriously, you know, suddenly you're in a much easier world, is where that NPV to CapEx ratio starts to tick over 1-to-1 post-tax.
Why'd you say that?
Talking to funders, you know, I've worked on both sides. I know a lot of groups. I've spoken to many, many groups, to like 15, 20 groups over the last couple of years. It is just a pretty standard thing that holds true, which is in copper, you want to be over NPV to CapEx 1-to-1 post-tax. Life gets a lot easier, and that's what we're still working towards. And again, look, people have said to me, Chris, you've done two scoping study updates after a scoping study. Why? And it's like, well, time is linear. News flow is important. We know that the project is economic. You know, we're not going to sit on a scoping study that we know is economic and not put that out into market. But that doesn't mean we don't have plenty of gas left in the tank and room to improve. I think there's a point where you just keep doing scoping studies, update after update after update. That's problematic. But, you know, 2 to 3 before you move on into PFS is totally reasonable, in my opinion.
Okay, so you're trying to arm yourself in terms of those kind of commercial conversations. So that's the bit that interests me, is the kind of commercial nature of those conversations and what data you need to make sure you're on the front foot, not the back foot, and are not desperate.
Yeah.
So in terms of you're suggesting there's, you know, if, you know, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of allocation rather than millions and burning through this capital reserve that you've now got in place. So I think people are saying, well, what's the best use of that capital? I think you've sort of described that today to me. It then comes down to those commercial conversations, the timing of them. Can you get anyone over the line? Are people in the data rooms? You know, what are they saying to you? What are they then doing? Because big companies move at a different pace, and you need to make sure that you can still be around to be able to have those conversations. So can you give us a sense of what this year looks like for you? And, you know, at the end of this year, you look back and go, okay, that was a good year because we did X. So what is X?
Look, I mean, the first thing, you know, you take the share price equation out of this and you look at what Coda's achieved in the last 12 months, what the team has achieved. It's taken a project with an NPV of 570 million and turned it into 826. We haven't changed assumptions. There are no tricks or silliness in that. That is a genuine technical breakthrough uplift to the project. If we can do that again over the next 6 months, then that will be a very, very good 18 months spent by the technical team. And again, we're talking about, you know, the first scoping study update in terms of spend on external consultants was under $250,000. And so, you know, to take you from 570 to 735, was enormous. Now, should we have done that in the original scoping study update? Yes, of course. But again, time is linear, and you sometimes you just have to keep doing the work. I think you asked about, you know, conversations with funders as well. Again, we do talk to groups. We are a regular contact. We run ideas past different groups as well, and just making sure that we keep being commercial. And I have almost no, I mean, I have no doubt at all that this project will be a mine one day. I think it's starting to really look like a real project. And having looked at many projects as a BD analyst, as a commercial manager on buy side, on sell side, you know, I know what a good project looks like. The trick here is to make sure the team, this team, us, can realize value for shareholders, and to make sure we're the ones to get value for shareholders for this project. Because let's face it, the industry is littered with examples of, you know, the third team getting it right. And this isn't going to be us. We're going to get it right first time. And we're going to make sure that happens. And I think we've got the right strategy. You know, this year looks like continued improvement, continued optimization, keeping costs extremely low, doing as much work as possible in-house, focusing on low-cost, high-value outcomes, and then making sure that those outcomes are communicated well with groups that do fund projects like this.
Don't go and blow your budget by doing crazy stuff you don't need to.
No.
Again, the amount of CEOs this year have said to me, do you know what, I was trying to last year demonstrate that we were still advancing the project. I wish I hadn't bothered, because we just blew through our budget and no one, the market didn't give us credit. So sounds sensible. Look, Chris, I appreciate the update. I also appreciate what you've got there. I guess it's just going through the phases and making sure you bring the right strategic partner. I think would be, to me, more exciting than a funder, because I think that will add more value than just, I guess, dumb money. So, yeah, stay in touch. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. Thank you, man.